Ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
Hello out there, my friends. This is Tim Banal of BanalofAmerica.com with another edition of Banal of America Audio, Season 1. It is December 17th, 2005. Our guest is Alfred Weber, and it's not just any interview. It is a co-production with Alfred Weber's internet audio show and podcast, Peace on Earth Radio. That's right, it's a veritable simulcast coming at you from BanalofAmerica.com and Exopolitics.com. We join forces for a very special edition of Banal of America Audio, where I'm reunited with Alfred Weber, whom I met at the X Conference in Washington, D.C. this past April. We really hit it off back there in Washington last spring, so when I heard that he was attached to this Paul Hellyer story that was making the rounds in ufology and the worldwide mainstream press, I was just totally blown away, and I got on the horn right away and got in touch with Alfred Weber. And when I spoke with Alfred Weber, he said, let's bring this conversation to not only the Banal of America audio listeners, but also the listeners to Peace on Earth Radio at exopolitics.com. And I was like, how do you pass up an opportunity like that? I'm totally psyched to be a part of this amazing simulcast. And I really can't say much more than that. We taped this interview on December 11th, 2005. You can find a previous interview I conducted with Alfred Weber at the X Conference in April at banalofamerica.com. You can get a lot of background on Alfred Weber there. But here's a little bio of him for you, so you are up to speed on who Alfred Weber is. Alfred Weber was a Fulbright scholar and holds degrees from Yale University, Yale Law School, and the University of Texas Counseling Program. He has taught economics at Yale University and civil liberties at the University of Texas, and has been a futurist at Stanford Research Institute. He has been general counsel to the New York City Environmental Protection Administration, environmental consultant to the Ford Foundation, and member of the Governor's Emergency Task Force on Earthquake Preparedness for the state of California. Weber produced and hosted the Instant of Cooperation, the first live radio broadcast between the USA and Soviet Union. He's the author of the book Exopolitics, and his website is www.exopolitics.com, and that's spelled EXOPOLITICS.com. Without any further ado, let's rock and roll here on this historic simulcast, a Banal of America Audio and Peace on Earth Radio production.
This is Peace on Earth Radio. I'm Alfred Lammermont Weber, and today we have a co-production with Banal of America at banalofamerica.com and Tim Banal. We're privileged to have him as our host. And we'll turn the production over to him. Tim?
Hi, how you doing, Alfred?
Oh, great. You know, the last time you and I spoke, we had a great interview. It was at the Exopolitics Conference in Washington, D.C. in April. I think it was April 22nd to 25th of 2005. And we were seated together at the dinner around a large round table. There were maybe 20 or so tables. We had a great conversation, so I'm very happy to be here with you today.
Yeah, that was really a great time, and I think we really got a chance to get to know each other and become friends. So when I saw the Paul Hellyer story going around this past couple weeks, I saw your name on there. I was like, way to go, Alfred. I was so excited for you to be a part of this amazing news story.
Well, yeah, also it's really a team. In other words, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, we've been working with him since 2001. He was the first major Canadian politician to endorse the Space Preservation Treaty to ban all weapons in space. This was back in 2001. And then together with Toronto Exopolitics Symposium with Victor Vigiani and Mike Bird, that gave him the platform that gave the Honorable Paul Hellyer, the former Minister of Defense of Canada, the platform to speak out on September 25th, 2005. And then with the Disclosure Project under Dr. Stephen Greer, www.disclosure.org, disclosureproject.org. And also with Steve Bassett, there's a tremendous amount of teamwork. Also with Paola Harris out of Rome, Italy. We've just been carrying that to this point.
That's great. So how did you get involved with Paul Hellyer from the get-go? Did he come to you guys about coming forward with some UFO, the movement towards UFO disclosure, or did you guys approach him?
Well, I think it's a complex story, and I know that we have some time here, so I'd like to unfold it a bit as I understand it. Originally, my nonprofit educational organization called the Institute for Cooperation in Space, our two missions are one to prevent the weaponization of space and to promote the transformation of the permanent war economy into a sustainable, peaceful, cooperative space age society. And also, a second aim of our organization is to promote cooperation amongst life forms in the universe. Well, through a mutual acquaintance, we first met the Honorable Paul Hellyer, who was Minister of Defense of Canada from 1963 to 67, and then Deputy Prime Minister under Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau. We met him through a mutual friend here in Vancouver. He was at that time the leader of the Canadian Action Party, and we met with him and with the present president of the Canadian Action Party, had a very full meeting. And at that time, he came on board and endorsed the Space Preservation Treaty, which we had co-developed, a whole group of people as co-architects, with our representative Dennis Kucinich, who's a Democrat of Ohio, who introduced the Space Preservation Act to ban all space-based weapons into the U.S. Congress in October of 2001. So it was sort of from that genesis that we began our interaction with him. And then when my book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, which was originally published, I put it out as a free online book in the year 2000, kind of to get to see the whole field and the concepts of exopolitics. Well, this year, a number of people approached us and about getting it, moving it from the online status into a print status. So we said, oh sure, let's do that. And in the spring of 2005, in the January, February, we approached Mr. Hellyer because he had been a senior advisor to ISIS, and we had spoken at his CUSP conference in Toronto, at the Toronto Metropolitan Convention Center, along with Dennis Kucinich in December of 2002. And so we approached Paul Hellyer and asked him if he wouldn't review the book Exopolitics, which had launched this entire field, and write an introduction to it. And he said, yes, send it to me, to my office. So I did. We sent it to his office, and he read and he wrote the most wonderful review and introduction, which he ended up then would be part of the landmark speech that he made at the University of Toronto. Well, after the text version of the book version of Exopolitics came out, where it was premiered at the Exopolitics conference where you and I were in Washington in April, at that time, we gave a copy to Mike Bird. And Mike was the, or I think Mike, either we gave it to him or I think Mike bought his own copy And but then Mike took it back to Toronto, and he and Victor Vigiani were at that point putting together the Toronto Exopolitics Symposium.
Yeah.
And they asked me whether or not I wanted to be there, but it turned out that on the exact same day, Sunday, September 25th, 2005, was the Nexus Conference in Brisbane, Australia, where I had been invited to go there and also to lecture throughout Australia on exopolitics. So we decided, along with Mike and Victor, from a strategic point of view, that it was very good for me to go over to Australia.
Yeah.
And to announce it at that time and to bring exopolitics to Australia, but that we would link up the two venues. So then as Mike and Victor has long experience in Canadian politics and is in the Ontario-Toronto area where the Honorable Paul Hellyer is, so I think what would happen, as I understand it, talking to Victor and Mike, is that then they got the concept of approaching Paul Hellyer to make a major statement at the Convocation Hall of the University of Toronto, which is the largest, one of the largest auditoriums in Toronto. Paul Hellyer, you have to understand, has been on the cover of Time magazine. He was the youngest serving member of the Canadian Parliament. He was first elected at the age of 25. And then he was just, you know, he was like a phenom.
Yeah.
And so then Victor and, as I understand it, Paul Hellyer began conversations. And at that point, some other friends of ours had just coincidentally, over the past several years, sent to Paul Hellyer a copy of Colonel Corso's book, The Day After Roswell. This was co-written by William F. Burns, who's the editor of UFO magazine and also the editor of Filament Books, and they published the online version of my book, Exopolitics, Politics, Governmental Law in the Universe. Well, to make a long story short, a friend of mine had two or three years ago had sent a copy of The Day After Roswell to Paul Hellyer. In the midst of all of this, he began, what he states in his speech is that he began reading it and putting two and two together, and because of his work as a supporter of the Space Preservation Treaty, the ban on space weapons, then verified it with contacts of his, because Canada is a full partner with the United States in NORAD, which is the North American Air Defense, which is in charge of monitoring all UFO and extraterrestrial traffic over North America. And so he put two and two together and called his contacts in the States, which is Minister of Defense. He was in charge of NORAD for Canada. So he called his contacts, and they say every word in Colonel Corso's book is true and more, i.e., not only did the U.S., through kind of that the Henry Kissinger, Nelson Rockefeller, David Rockefeller connection, privatize all of that technology and put it in the corporation so they make profits out of it through the Rockefeller Empire, but now the U.S. is spending $85 billion a year for space-based weapons. Well, we're in almost 2006. For 2010, this is by congressional record budget figures, they have $600 billion that are planned for space-based weapons in 2010, which is only 4 years away. So what the general told him is that, yes, some portion of this, and it could be all of it, the U.S. Space Command is planning to deploy space-based weapons, including directed energy weapons and laser weapons, a kind of Buck Rogers technology, for warfare and hostile intent against ethical off-planet cultures that have shown no sign of being hostile. So Mr. Hellyer is one of the outstanding statespersons and politicians and Minister of Defense, like the Secretary of Defense of the United States. He was in charge of the defense of Canada.
Yeah.
Well, if the Americans are going to start a war with extraterrestrial society, Canada is the second largest landmass on the planet, after the Russian Federation, which is 11 time zones. So we are at the landmass between Russia and the U.S., and we go all the way up to the polar ice cap. And so he chose that occasion at Toronto Exopolitics to come forth. Now I'm just going to conclude with this, you know, since you asked me this capsule summary, but I want to give listeners the concept of how this has impacted in, for example, the journalistic world. Our non-governmental organizations, Toronto Exopolitics Disclosure Project and the Institute for Cooperation in Space, put out a story because this became an election issue here, and the conservatives, who are like the Bush Party up here in Canada, they indicated they would be putting back on the table U.S. missile defense, which Canada had already said no to.
Yes.
So we issued a story, and we had an official counter. And at last count, that story, which says, you know, former Minister of Defense of Canada calls for public hearings on extraterrestrials, that story has been read and downloaded at last count by over 577,000 journalists, registered journalists worldwide. That's over 500,000 journalists. And it's been officially downloaded and registered by 250,000 media organizations worldwide.
Wow.
That's a quarter of a million media organizations. So there's a tremendous amount of interest in this story, and it's moving forward as an election issue as we speak here. There's a national, there's a federal election going on in Canada. The election is going to be on January 23rd, 2006, but it's like the midterm elections in the States. It's slightly different because of our parliamentary system, but so what has happened, you're quite right, Tim, is that this whole issue has now moved into the mainstream.
Wow. Yeah, it sure sounds that way. Now, from what I gather from what you just said, it sounds like Hellyer's getting information not just from the book The Day After Roswell, but he's going above and beyond that and trying to confirm some of that with people he knows on the inside.
Yes. He actually, his speech is available online, and if you go to www.exopolitics.com, there'll be a sidebar there that's called the 2006 Peace on Earth platform, and you can click on that, and the Jerry Pippin organization, jerrypippin.com, has put together a magnificent web page with a video of his speech. Now, what's really interesting, because I think it's important to fill in all the nooks and crannies, is that apparently the people who were hired that day in Toronto to do the videotape, and all of a sudden, for some reason, it didn't work, and the videotape disappeared or didn't work. Well, there was a gentleman in the audience who was living in Canada. He's from one of the West African nations, I think. And he was sitting in the audience, and he videotaped the entire speech from his seat in the balcony. It's a magnificent copy. It's like a miracle.
Oh, wow.
And Mike Bird was telling me, and Victor, that afterward, you know, they had set up and had hired this video team, and suddenly it wasn't there, and, you know, the usual kind of, the quote, usual suspects that happens in our field.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, this fellow from West Africa was in the audience, and he videotaped it, and he got in touch with Mike and Victor, and there's a magnificent tape. I mean, it's like historic, which if you go to exopolitics.com or to jerrypippin.com, you will find, because we're trying to network all of this media, and we really appreciate your being open to do a co-production today so we can cross-network and get all of the information out and kind of exponentialize our resources and synergize. But that's kind of, just to give you some of the backstory, that's how we have that. And what Mr. Hellyer said in that speech, which is an historical document, is that he had verified this with contacts of his in the United States. Now, since then, there's a tremendous amount of briefing and other materials that are going on. I know that the Disclosure Project, which, as you know, has initially 20, then 100, and now 400 high-level military intelligence and governmental witnesses at the Institute for Cooperation in Space. My co-director, Dr. Carol Rosin, was a Disclosure Project witness. She testified at the Disclosure Project press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. on May 9, 2001. I was a Disclosure Project witness. I filed, in fact, the only sworn affidavit of my testimony, which had to do with the proposed 1977 Carter White House extraterrestrial communication study, of which I was the director in my capacity as a futurist at the Center for the Study of Social Policy at Stanford Research Institute. Daniel Sheehan, who is our ISIS general counsel, he's a counsel. He was in the Pentagon Papers trial, and he represented Karen Silkwood. He was also a Disclosure Project witness. So that a lot of the briefings and of the witnesses and of the briefing documents, et cetera, are now becoming part of it. And there's a whole series of preparations now which are being made, which are being put into effect to bring some of the major, not only Disclosure Project witnesses that have come forth, but perhaps also high-ranking military intelligence personnel of the United States Armed Forces to come in and brief not only Minister Hellyer, which totally backs up his stories, but also to come in and begin to brief the Prime Minister of Canada and the leaders of the four major parties here. There's the Liberal Party here, there's the Conservative, the kind of the Republican Democrat, then there's the New Democratic Party, and then there's the Parti Québécois. They're the Bloc Québécois. They're like the Quebec Separatist Party.
Yeah.
So they're all going to get briefings. So it's like a doorway has opened, and all of the resources that are down in the USA, all of these military intelligence people that have been banging on the doors of Congress, banging on the doors of the White House, banging on the doors of the media, are now finding an opening here in Canada.
That's fantastic. What's been the reaction up in Canada from the politicians and the authorities when this Hellyer story came out the last couple of weeks? Have they said anything about it?
Well, yes. This is what they call a breaking political story. And the context is that we are now, unlike U.S. politics, where you have, a presidential campaign that's 2 years long.
Yeah.
That is, in fact, some people start running 4 years along, but they're at least, they're 2 years long, and then you have the primaries, and then in that final 12 months, it really gets intense. So you have a kind of permanent campaigning going. So American style of politics, some people say that it's bread and circuses, but, to each their own.
Yeah.
But here in Canada, by law, the electoral campaign is limited to 30 days, 30 calendar days.
Wow.
So, any citizen can go down and put down their $10 and, run and run for parliament. And what's really interesting is that in the 2004 election, one of the politicians who ran members of parliament as an independent, he ran out of here in B.C., and he turned out to cast the deciding vote that kept the government in power when we had, for the first time in Canadian history, the Speaker of the House of Commons had to intervene and cast a deciding vote on a tie vote. that politician ran as an independent. So here you go up, you put up your filing fee, and you can run because you only got 30 days. So as we speak right now, we're in a 30-day campaign. Officially, there's going to be a break for the Christmas holidays. You know, nobody really wanted a campaign here at Christmas, but the Bush people up here in Canada, the Conservative Party pushed for it. It was really interesting, right, because they're kind of born-again Christians, but yet they're pushing for elections during Christmas.
Yeah.
Sort of weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, in these 30 days right now, it's really intense. It's like you can imagine all the action that you have packed over 2 years in the state. Well, you got it packed here into 30-day periods. You got to really hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And it's like a relay team. It's like the 100-yard dash. So we're doing that. We're reaching out to all of the campaigns, but primarily we're looking at the post-January 23rd period, at which we're going to be making available through the Disclosure Project, combined efforts of the Institute for Cooperation in Space and Exopolitics Toronto, will be approaching both the new Prime Minister and leaders, and as well we'll be going back to the Canadian Senate. The Canadian Senate is a little different from down in the States. In the States, it's elected every 6 years, as you know. Here, the Senate is appointed. It's a little bit like the House of Lords in Britain, because our head of state is the Queen of England, or the monarch of England. Right now it's Queen Elizabeth II. And we have a Governor General here who's a representative of the Queen, who's very interesting. So how far out Canada is, the new Governor General here was actually a refugee from Haiti. So things are pretty far out here, and compared to the U.S., and the Canadian Senate, because it's appointed, tends to be wise people, so they were able to deal successfully with issues like, controversial issues like same-sex marriage, which they first studied and said, hey, if people want to make that kind of commitment, it's fine by us. So now same-sex marriage is legal in Canada, also the decriminalization of medical marijuana, such that, which the Canadian Senate first did, such that when the snap election was called, one of the bills that died in the Canadian House of Commons was a bill to decriminalize possession of small amounts of pot. And you know that there are guys down in a penitentiary in Texas that are doing 10 to 20 years because somebody found a roach in their van. You know?
Yeah.
So that is like, that's the cocaine gang, the Bush Cheney cocaine gang, going after the kind of organic growers.
Yeah.
The hemp people. So the Canadian Senate is a body that can deal with these kind of situations. They do not have a New World Order agenda.
That's good.
Which the Bush administration has, going back to Skull and Bones, better known as the Order of Death, which is a Nazi party. They finance Adolf Hitler. They finance the Bolsheviks. Avril Harriman of Skull and Bones actually exported U.S. dollar plates and whole factories to the Bolsheviks so that they were able to manage communism versus capitalism to get the whole Cold War going. All this is documented in Chris Milliken's books, and they're the people that have been privatizing the whole extraterrestrial technology and contact for their own private profit. Well, we're going to be going back to the Canadian Senate in January after the election. So everything is going forward here on a regular basis, and also now we have been able to develop and refine what we call the exopolitics platform. In other words, if we were going to look at an exopolitics platform that all of the competent jurisdictions or governments that deal with these issues, starting with you know, the closest thing that we have to kind of a, you know, take me to your leader, planetary authority, that would be the UN. And then nations like China, Russia, that are spacefaring nations, United States, spacefaring nation, and Canada. If we look at what the UN General Assembly has done, in 1978, there was an actual resolution approved by the UN General Assembly. There are 191 member nations now. Whatever member nations were then, it was approved. And with that resolution, provides, in fact, I'll quote for it. This is United Nations General Assembly Decision 33/46, 1978, approved 18 December 1978, so we're coming up to almost the 28th anniversary of it, provides, quote, "The General Assembly invites interested member states to take appropriate steps to coordinate on a national level scientific research and investigation into extraterrestrial life," quote end of quote, "including unidentified flying objects, and to inform the Secretary General of the observations, research, and evaluation of such activities." Well, if we look at what elements would there be in a platform that we would want either the UN or Canada or the U.S. or any other nation to adopt, we've been able to isolate four. There may be others. And it's funny, they're the four D's.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, that's the four D's, right?
Yeah, and that is disclosure, decade of contact, disarmament, and diplomacy. And by disclosure, that means official disclosure about an extraterrestrial presence around Earth. And that's something that the Disclosure Project has been seeking, that many, many people if you take the 2002 Roper poll, depending on how you ask the question, between 45% and 85% of respondents, in other words, the population of North America, of the United States, they were congruent with an extraterrestrial presence. They were cool with it. Did not conflict with their religion. They wouldn't freak out about it.
Yeah.
They figured that the government was, you know, hiding it. These are things that everybody knows. And by disclosure, then, would mean an open, transparent, official governmental disclosure and declassification of all past and present programs related to the extraterrestrial present. Secondly, would be what we call the decade of contact. And we spoke a lot about this, you and I, in Washington, when we unveiled the Star Dreams Initiative at
yes.
FBI, and that is public funding of a 10-year process of formal public education, scientific research, educational curricula, development, strategic planning, community activity, and public outreach about the extraterrestrial presence and our future in a populated universe. And in other words, hey, this is going from the Earth is flat to the Earth is round, to all intelligent life ends at the geostationary orbit, which was what 20th Century Science says, to we live in a populated universe filled with intelligent, evolving civilization. So we need at least a decade of publicly funded. Let's take some of those funds out of the threat scenario that they're doing, the $600 billion they're doing for space-based weapons, and put it into research and education.
Exactly.
The third D, right, so we've got disclosure, decade of contact. The third D is disarmament. In other words, this is what Dr. Wernher von Braun, who was the head of rocketry in the Third Reich, came over and did rocketry for the Fourth Reich, they say, through NASA. Well, he turned out to be a bit of a whistleblower, and Carol Rosen got to know him in his latter years. In fact, she helped him, was at his deathbed, and then put his ashes, you know.
Yeah.
And what he told her on his deathbed, and this is documented in an interview with Linda Moulton Howe, was that he said, this is Wernher von Braun as a whistleblower, and he's been an insider since Hitler, which is like, and it was Bush who financed Hitler, it was Prescott Bush, George W. Bush's grandfather, who as a banker at the Union Banking Corporation, and Harriman and Son, they bankrolled Hitler going back to 1923, and that's all documented. In other words, it was just a chapter of Skull and Bones, of the Order of Death, was the chapter of the secret society in Germany that then they coddled and financed Hitler from 1923 going forward. This is what they call the Illuminati, or the World Conspiracy, kind of the Dark Forces,
The
Order of Death. They just keep the permanent war economy going. They were running both sides of the war during World War II, and this was known, and then it came out that they didn't want to do it because they thought that there would be revolts of the workers and the soldiers in the field when they found out that World War II was being manipulated on the Axis side by the Harrimans and Bushes of the world and on the U.S. side, just to make money. That's what they were about. So the third element is disarmament, which is a permanent ban on space-based weapons and warfare in space through a space preservation treaty that would ban all weapons. We in Canada here in 1997 brought together under the government of Canada in the Landmines Convention. It is a convention banning all the use of landmines. It's a real problem. They're blowing up kids all around the world. Princess Diana got involved, and 123 nations came here in 1997 over a three-day period and signed the Ottawa Convention banning landmines. So the same sort of thing now, where the only parties on record, this is every year they have a vote at the United Nations General Assembly on a treaty permanently banning the weaponization of space. In 2003, the vote was 176-0. They said, yeah, we need a treaty. There were two abstentions, you know, plus one of them, Micronesia or something.
Yeah.
And the two abstentions were the United States and Israel. Those are the only parties that are for the weaponization of space. Why? Because they're part of the Illuminati conspiracy, and they make their money through a permanent war economy. There is no war going on. There are no evil extraterrestrials. What Dr. Wernher von Braun said was that they're going to come forward with three wars. The first war is going to be a phony after the Cold War collapses and they need another enemy to keep this duality of war going, because that's what you need. The permanent war economy sees war as an industrial activity. It's like making shoes to them. So he said that the first war first phony war is going to be a war on terror. Well, guess what? 9-1-1, it is demonstrated by university professors on down that was a black budget operation of the United States government, of the United States black budget, things. I mean, even FEMA was up there the night before getting ready for the controlled demolition of the Twin Towers. One of my buddies was down right by the World Trade Center and ran into FEMA operatives there on September 10th, 2001. And so that's what, and then he said, look, there's going to be a second war, and phony war, and that's the war against the asteroids. Oh, you better watch out. This near-Earth orbit objects are going to come blow us out of the water, so we need all this rocketry and all this stuff. You got to be scared of the heavens because it's going to blow you out. And Barbara Han Clow shows through Catastrophobia that the reason why we feel the Earth is coming to an end is because we had that extinction 11,500 years ago when the last galactic superwave took place and an enormous species extinction. But that's a memory in the past, not a memory of the future. Now, the third phony war that Wernher von Braun said was what they call the war. This is the final card that they have, the war against the evil ETs.
Yeah.
And so then you have Steven Spielberg and Nicole Kidman's former husband, Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
He goes out, and they have a remake of The War of the Worlds, which is like libel against the Martians, who scientific remote viewing, even by U.S. Army intelligence, as Major General Albert Stubblebine III has said publicly, yeah, there's a civilization under Mars. They're peaceful. They're secretive. There are no world wars going on under the face of Mars. So what do? They bring out War of the Worlds as a libel to, like, just like they used to do against the Russians. We'll make things against evil Russians so that you have, justify all these expenditures. Well, we now have a space preservation treaty, and that bans all weapons and warfare in space, and we have a World Peace Forum, 2006, which is scheduled for Vancouver, British Columbia, in June 23rd to 28th, 2006. And we have invited to come there, various governments to come here and sit down and sign that treaty. Once it's signed by two governments or more, it can be filed with the United Nations Secretary General under Article 102 of the United Nations Charter. It becomes an effective international instrument, and then we just go around. Hey, the 26 South American countries, starting with Venezuela, starting with Argentina, Chile, Brazil, they're ready to ban weapons in space, and they've so voted at the United Nations. So there are all these ways to work around this rogue government. That's nothing but a skull and bones government down in the U.S.
Yeah.
By the way, I went to Yale. I was not in a skull and bones. I was in an underground society called Torch and Talon. And we rented a beach house out in Brantford and would go out there twice a week and kind of, tell our stories. But, there was none of this stuff going on. We all chipped in $30 for the rent.
Nice. Well, that's good. All right. Now, yeah. I got a tough question for you.
Okay.
Because we have a writer at my website. It's been all of America.
Right.
And the writer, Leslie, she's one of the hardest working women in ufology. She's very modest. You probably haven't heard of her yet. And I usually tell her when I'm going to be talking to people, and she gets
right
back to me. Usually she doesn't have any questions, but this time she did, so it was kind of exciting.
Okay.
But, she's used to listening to a lot of these paranormal radio shows, and she's a little weary of remote viewing being used as evidence. And can you speak to the validity of remote viewing in the face of all these snake oil salesmen, remote viewers who are...
One could question why Ed Danes is on Art Bell.
Yeah.
Because he is demonstrated in the book of Jim Mars on remote viewing as probable a CIA disinformation person who was responsible for the downfall of a lot of the projects. So that's Jim Mars' research on that. As to your friend's weariness, I suggest if she's in this field, she might want to try another field, because anybody who's weary here doesn't belong in this field. I can tell you from my personal experience, and I would urge you and her to read those, I came into Stanford Research Institute in the spring of 1977. I met Russell Targ and Dr. Hal Puthoff in December of 1976. They were developing, and I met Ingo Swann, who I met him down at the loft down at the Bowery in New York in the fall of 1976. And they were doing the first CIA finance, Department of Defense finance, remote viewing experiments on as an espionage technology. And I would urge you and your friends to, before you get weary, to begin to read some of the scientific literature, namely Russell Targ's book, namely Targ and Puthoff's book, which has just been reissued by Hampton Roads Press. such as the scientific articles, and Courtney Brown's new book that I was privileged to get a copy of from him and attend his lectures at the IIIHS conference this in Montreal this past spring. Both myself and my spouse, Jerry Stefano, are going to be presenting at the May 2006 IIIHS conference in Montreal. And then I think that your friend, when she gets more and more weary, should start reading some of the books, like David Morehouse and Joe Monagle, and also she can go to www.peaceandspace.net and read the speech of Major General Albert Stubblebine III, who was Chief of U.S. Army Intelligence, who revealed that since the late 80s, they were using remote viewing in order to survey and gather more about the intelligent civilizations on other celestial bodies, including Mars. And not only that, by the scientific method where you have remote viewing, you can always verify in a terrestrial espionage situation, because you send a human spy in and you verify what you saw, or you use photography. Well, in 1991, the Soviets released photographs of the Phobos probe being shot down by a Martian vehicle in 1989, which was verification of what the remote viewers had seen in 1989. So you meet all of the tests of the scientific method, which are where you have standard laboratory protocols, and you receive replicability of results, and then you have independent verification through photography like the Phobos probe that was released in 1991. There you have it. So I would urge one way that she can get started on recognizing who are the disinformation agents that the national security state has placed out there in public. Jim Marks fingers Ed Dames as a main one, but she should go to Ed Dames' book, go to Jim Marks' book, and start there, and she'll become less weary and more excited.
All right, let me touch on the other. She had another question. It's not as tough, but all right. Okay. I think you can kind of understand the remote viewing question, though, when you look at it in light of some of the people you hear claiming to be remote viewers and making grandiose claims on the radio.
Okay.
That, you know what I mean?
If you go to a place like www.farsight.org, which is the Farsight Institute, well, you have long transcripts and verification.
Yeah.
What I like to say is that anybody can become a remote viewer, but it's going through the rigor of the training protocols.
Yeah.
So I think that as in our field demands rigorous discernment among its experimenters, and remote viewing is no exception to this.
Okay, and then the other portion here of the question was, how are you planning on addressing the abduction phenomenon to the general public once this disclosure starts to begin?
I understand. I'm sitting here holding a very beautiful book called Awakening, How Extraterrestrial Contact Can Transform Your Life, by my friend Mary Rodwell of Perth, Australia. I was with Mary in Australia at the Nexus Conference in Brisbane. And you're saying, in my opinion, this book will become the Bible of the Alien Abduction Phenomenon, forward by Dr. Roger Lear. Our institute, the Institute for Cooperation in Space, also had a very friendly relationship with the John Mack Institute and with Dr. John Mack prior to his tragic death. And I coordinated with John and my my co-director, Dr. Carol Rosen, did as well, and we're well familiar with his work. This is where the remote viewing data really comes in, and also I'm going to jump to the chase here, the data of MILAB, the Military Abduction Program, which is a disinformation program to make the extraterrestrials seem evil, that is using military personnel. A lot of those abductions, a lot of them take place right by U.S. military bases. They use mind control techniques with phony abductions so that you have, quote, abductees who have just gone through a major deception operation, come back and report bad. And also through the remote viewing data, which I would urge your colleague there to get into and get under her belt if she's really going to become serious about this work, look at the alternate researchers like Mary Rodwell, like Dr. John Mack, the late Dr. John Mack, and look at the remote viewing data, which indicates that in the genuine, quote, abductions, which you can also say are debriefings, you know, it depends, like, beam me up, Scotty. A lot of people report peak experiences. So that's why, in our judgment, the MILAB program, military abduction program, was deployed, because they had to get, like, bad reports out there to cloud it all.
Yes.
Now, we are just about coming up to the end. So I would urge, this is a great area because remote viewing data provides the inside story on why advanced races like the advanced grays, who are about a million years in advance of our own, according to the remote viewing data, replicable, may have time travel capability as well as space travel. In fact, all space travel has got to be time travel because you can't do these enormous distances without using wormholes and kind of dimension jumping, and that from that data, that demonstrates a slightly different take on this whole thing. And the take on the whole thing is that the exopolitics model is confirmed, and that is that we may live in a populated, multidimensional, multigalactic, multiverse, and that there is a higher plan, and part of that plan is to save this planet from blowing ourselves up, because we are a very conflict-ridden race, who at any point in time, there are 150 wars going on this planet, many of them religious wars of one god versus the other god, and it's just a matter of our atavistic perceptions. Such that there's a way to reframe the entire, quote, abduction phenomenon into, quote, a debriefing phenomenon. With the troublesome cases, those are mainly MILAB cases, military abduction carried out by the Bush gang, the Bush Rockefeller gang, and the Black Budget gang using mind control techniques. So I have no problems there at all.
All right. Well, probably the biggest and most important question, this doesn't come from anyone but me, really, but probably a lot of people in ufology, is
we have 4 minutes.
All right. Well, how can we help? How can we help get this disclosure thing going? What's the best way for
you? You know, that is absolutely the best way, and it's like the exopolitical movement is like any other political movement, and the purpose of it is to link up into what I call the exopolitical future. In other words, rather than the world ending in fire in a nuclear conflagration or the world ending in ice and global warming, we can link up with our heritage inside of a populated universe. It's inside of linking up to ethical off-planet cultures, and The way to help is as follows. Very specifically, you can go to two websites. One is www.peaceandspace.net, and the other is you can go to www.exopolitics.com. And these are source websites. In other words, a lot of original ideas from groups of people coming through here. And if you're American, you can get involved in taking what we call the 4Ds. In other words, disclosure, decade of contact, disarmament, and diplomacy with authentic cultures, not war against them. And bring that, for example, if you're American, to the U.S. midterm election, which is November 7th, 2006, and ask all of your candidates, no matter what party, Republican, Democrat, Green, Independent, where do they stand on that platform? You can start bringing the issue to the president, the new president of the UN General Assembly, Mr. Eliasson, who's Swedish and who's very, you know, open-minded on these issues. And the General Assembly has already spoken 28 years ago. You can go and you can write letters as a world citizen. If you're Canadian, you can get involved here, writing to the Canadian Parliament to hold hearings. So with the Honorable Paul Hellyer, we call him our icebreaker.
Yeah.
He's kind of broken up the ice. So it's like anything else. If you remember, in the 60s, we had the Freedom Riders. Then we brought in the Civil Rights Act and all of that.
Yeah.
It's the same process. We now have the Freedom Riders. That's the exopolitical movement, the great freedom rider of them all, Mr. Hellyer. We just got to push through. And everybody's got to get involved from the body politic. They have to get involved. It is a participatory thing, and that's what universe society keeps on telling us.
Excellent. Yeah, I think everybody has to do their part. You can't just sit there and listen and say, you know, someone else will do it. You got to throw in your share of the work too.
You know, we've come to the end.
Yeah.
Kim, this has really been good, and I really appreciate the tough questions because it gets us the opportunity to get out the tough answers, which is generally unmasking a lot of the disinformation that is out there.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate give our best to Leslie and tell her to just keep it up. And I hope that this is the first of many co-productions.
I hope so too, yeah.
Between Banal of America. I know that you did a yeoman service, and you guys were the first guys that put on the net the Exopolitics Press Conference at the National Press Club on April 25th, 2005.
Let me throw my website plug in here for your listeners. It's www.binnalofamerica.com. So that way they can get a hold of
me. Yeah, and Tim and Banal of America, if it were not for them, people would not have an historical record of that National Exopolitics Press Conference. So we want to express our gratitude and appreciation here.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank
Great.
You.
So I hope that we can do this in the future. I see our clock is ticking down.
Yes.
So I'm going to jump in here as our co-host and say that it's been a pleasure to be with Tim Banal of Banal of America. I'm Alfred Weber of Peace on Earth Radio, we wish you all a miracle-filled day. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
That does it for this week's edition of Banal of America Audio Season 1. I want to thank Alfred Weber for the amazing opportunity to bring our conversation to both groups of listeners and bridge the shows. I'm really humbled that he would even consider having me as a co-host, quasi-guest, for Peace on Earth Radio, so I really want to thank him for that. And of course, you can find out more information on Alfred Weber and the Exopolitical Initiatives for 2006 at www.exopolitics.com, exopolitics.com. I want to thank Leslie for her amazing questions for Alfred, and Chiron for his continued support and help with the audio series. And of course, I want to thank all you great listeners out there. Next week, it is a very special Christmas Eve edition of Banal of America Audio. I think you're going to flip out when you hear this. Stanton Friedman, the father of modern-day ufology, sat down with me, and we recorded about an hour of awesome material. It's a little bit of an early Christmas present for the Banal of America audio listeners, and that's going to be up at banalofamerica.com on December 24th, 2005, Christmas Eve. I hope you come back and check that out. Until you hear from me again, this is Tim Banal of Banal of America Audio, signing off.